This is special coverage from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. The official explanation of Harriet Meyer's withdrawal is the irreconcilable conflict between the Senate's demand for documents covering her service as White House counsel and executive privilege, the president's right to consult his lawyer in confidence. Few will believe it. Harriet Meyer's nomination to the Supreme Court faltered at the start and never gained momentum. In a statement issued at the White House today, President Bush accepted Meyer's withdrawal with reluctance. This hour, we'll find out what went wrong and why, explore the political price of this failure for President Bush, and look ahead to the possibilities for the next nominee, and in the meantime, at a Supreme Court which still includes Sandra Day O'Connor. We begin with NPR's national political correspondent Mara Liasson and with David Savage, who covers the Supreme Court for the Los Angeles Times. They're both with us here in the studio. Thanks very much for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
Hi, Neil.
Mara, we know that Harriet Meyer's loyalty to President Bush was one of the reasons he nominated her in the first place. Was loyalty the reason she withdrew?
Well, yes, you could put it that way. Her nomination had become a big political problem for the president. Now, we don't know exactly how it worked. Did she come to him and say, I think I'm going to withdraw? And he said, oh, no, Harriet, please stay. And she said, no, I insist. We don't know about that. But it had become a political problem for him. She is getting nothing but praise from conservatives who opposed her nomination, saying basically she did the right thing, that she did the right thing for the president. I guess in terms of whether he's politically hurt by her withdrawal, I think that he probably is in the short term to some extent. It was Senator Specter who said that when he was asked if Meyer would withdraw, he said, absolutely not. I think that would be a sign of incredible weakness. So Democrats will certainly try to paint it that way and make it look like he was a captive of his right-wing base who had rebelled against the Meyer nomination. But he lanced a political boil today.
David Savage, let's turn to you. There's been a great deal of swirl today around this story. Briefly remind us, and I guess as you were pointing out to me just before the program, this is the third time that President Bush will have an opportunity to name a replacement for Sandra Day O'Connor.
Yes, and in mid-July he was faced with this choice and picked John Roberts. It turned out to be a very good pick, but as you recall, Chief Justice Rehnquist died over the Labor Day weekend, and he switched the Roberts nomination to be Chief Justice. Now we're sort of back where he was stuck in September. At the end of September, we sort of thought he must know who he's going to pick. And then Roberts was confirmed, and the White House said put out some statements saying, actually, there's not an ideal choice this time, and the president's going to go up to Camp David and think about it over the weekend. And I think they thought that Harriet Meyer was sort of the safe pick because you had somebody like Al Gonzalez, the attorney general, would be the first Hispanic nominee. But the right-wing groups said were adamantly opposed to him. He's too moderate. He's like an O'Connor. He's in the middle of the road on affirmative action and on abortion. There were a series of very conservative nominees, and the Democrats said if you pick one of them, it's an all-out war. There's going to be a filibuster fight. Andy Card leaked the name of Harriet Meyer a few days before.
White House Chief of Staff Andrew Card.
Yes, and no one took that seriously. No one took it seriously. It was just a name. And so there was no opposition voiced to Harriet Meyer. So they had the president had a situation where he knew he was going to have a big fight if he went one way. He knew he was going to have a big fight if he went another way. And then there was Harriet Meyer that no one opposed.
I think David is making a really good point. I remember talking to conservatives in that trial balloon phase of Meyer, and they're saying, oh, he's not going to pick Harriet Meyer. That was inconceivable to them. They just didn't take it seriously because they felt, of course, there were so many well-qualified conservative candidates for him to choose from. But I think that they did think this was perfect. Someone who is conservative, they felt they knew, but had no paper trail at all. As it turned out, she had a paper trail. And the paper trail that she had, these speeches and writings and various things, was not helpful to her. So the vetting process, such as it was in the White House, didn't really work. And this is, I think, a problem when you nominate someone that you feel you know so very well for so many years.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mara, remember, she was in charge of the vetting process. It's another problem to pick somebody who's in charge of the vetting
process.
Well,
her deputy actually was supposed to have vetted her, but yeah.
And I think what happens in a situation like that, there's no memo in the files that says, here's the downside of this nominee.
Right.
Because it's the person in charge of the process. There was no, when they were considering vice presidents, there was nothing in the files that said, here's the problem if you pick Dick Cheney. Dick Cheney was in charge of the process. Anyway, so they picked somebody who they thought was a safe pick, would not cause a lot of controversy, and from the very beginning, a lot of conservatives, including people like David Frum, who worked in the White House, from the very beginning said, this woman, she's a very nice woman, but she's not up to the standards of the Supreme Court. Everything we learned about her in the month after that sort of reaffirmed that impression.
I don't think they were completely caught unawares that there would be problems with her on the right. They knew there were going to be some. They didn't understand the extent of it. And apparently what I've heard is that Karl Rove did warn the president, you're going to take a lot of heat on this. But they felt that with the message she's an evangelical, they could smooth over some of this, and it didn't work.
And that backfired to people saying, look, you were arguing a couple of months ago that John Roberts' religion was irrelevant to his appointment. How can Harriet Meyer's religion suddenly be relevant?
Yeah, and this really, just from a political standpoint, this was an amazing moment for the Republican Party. President Bush had assembled this unbelievably disciplined and unified coalition behind him. And even when conservatives of different stripes, whether they were social conservatives or economic conservatives or small government types, even if they had problems with individual policies that he was promoting, they swallowed all those disagreements. They stuck together for this moment, for the moment when they could achieve their greatest priority, which was moving the court to the right. And it all started to fall apart with the Myers nomination. And I don't know to what extent it comes back together. I think he has a chance to repair some of the breach.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's find out a little bit about how deep that breach is. Joining us now is Jay Sekulow, chief counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice. He joins us now by phone from Nashville, Tennessee. Jay, good to speak with you
again.
Hi,
thanks for having me.
And Jay Sekulow was a supporter of the Harriet Myers nomination. But what do you think happened to it?
Well, I think it was a confluence of a couple of different things, actually, one of which was clearly this issue over the documents was going to be a roadblock, a hurdle, if you will, that I don't think she could have gotten over, and that is the Senate, both Republicans and Democrats, wanted some more information about who she is. They thought the documents would be the best way to get that, and of course the president said on Monday, and understandably so, that he was going to claim executive privilege on those, which makes sense. So I think that presented hurdle one. Hurdle two was, and I think this is just the timing of everything, it wasn't clicking on Capitol Hill. You always look at the political ramifications of things, and I think it's just the sense was they wanted a lot more information. They weren't going to get the kind of information they wanted because of the sensitive role she's played, and so things on the Hill were not going particularly well. And I think the last thing is that the fact that you had a split within the conservative party certainly didn't help anything.
And where did that split come from? It seemed like a lot of social conservatives were, in fact, in favor of the Myers nomination.
Yeah, that's an interesting dynamic here, and you're absolutely correct. Social conservatives were, in fact, lining up in support of Harriet Myers and had from the first day. I worked with her at the White House counsel's office and saw how she was involved in the judicial selection process, so I was always very comfortable with her. But there were other conservatives that were not, and I think that split really maybe put into focus this general disagreement that was going on that ultimately played itself out at the Senate.
And what Mara was talking about was that moment where the President of the United States, a two-term Republican President of the United States, said, trust me, let's go. And a lot of people said, wait a minute.
Well, that's right. And there was, because they didn't know who she was, and then as the process unfolded, they weren't getting enough information, they felt, to make that kind of big decision that you make when you're doing advice and consent. And I think the White House then realized, probably is realistically over the weekend and yesterday, through yesterday, that this was a significant obstacle.
And given this, do you think that the previous feeling amongst conservatives can ever be recaptured?
I think it can. I think the president's going to. I think a couple things are going to happen here. One is the president's, I think, going to pick a judicial conservative that has a known judicial philosophy. That means probably an appellate court judge. So that's number one. I think you're going to see that. Number two, they'll have a record, so there's not going to be guessing. And I think once you have that and the president comes out with a conservative nominee, a former, you know, someone who's a current court of appeals judge, I think the answer is that they will coalesce behind him and you'll see a lot of unity for the candidate.
Well, let's hear another voice on this. Joining us now from his home here in Washington is a former speechwriter for President Bush and a critic of the Harriet Myers appointment. David Frum is with us. Nice of you to join us today.
Thank you.
And I know that you, in a blog you write for the National Review Online, said today the system worked. How so?
I think the president has met, I think there's not been a president who's gone through 8 years without making a single mistake, not even George Washington. This president is not going to break the trend. He made a mistake. He corrected it. I completely agree with it. If it's Jay Sekulow you're talking to, I think I recognize the voice.
I agree
with what he just said. I think that there's going to be now a rallying of conservatives around the president. I think he's going to make a good next choice. I think that next choice is going to get through the Senate, and you're going to see a united Republican Party facing the challenge of the head.
David, to be fair, there were some nasty things that were said, some of them about you, and I wonder, is this taken personally or grudges held?
I can't speak for anybody else. I know a lot was at stake. It was an intense fight. The emotions ran high, but I think, for myself, I understand. People, if you're not prepared to have people say nasty things about you, you shouldn't live inside the Washington city limits. I think the results are results we can be proud of.
Jay Sekulow, on the other side, there are going to be some people at the White House who are going to be a little less trustful of their conservative allies.
I actually don't think that's right. I think what David said is correct, and that is the president's going to pick a known conservative now. He saw that picking someone that wasn't known, although he knew Harriet Myers, the country did not, and more importantly, the Senate Judiciary Committee did not. And I think the president's going to do the right thing here, and that is, as you look at the list now of potential nominees, and only the White House has that, and only the president knows for sure, I think you're going to see a known judicial conservative. I would hope that now you'd see people like Priscilla Owen, Janice Rogers Brown, Mike Luttig, Sam Alito, people that have served on the bench, so that we don't have an internal disagreement. And I don't think it really – I never felt it got ugly. I mean, we're friends and we disagreed. But I think that you will see the conservative side come together when the nominee is announced, because I believe the president's going to appoint a conservative judicial nominee. It's probably not going to be somebody from the White House or from the Justice Department, because I think that is just an obstacle you can't cross right now.
We're going to have to ask you both to hang on the line for just a moment, and we'll be also asking you both more about those prospective nominees for the appointment now. We'll also be talking not just with Jay Sekulow of the American Center for Law and Justice, and with David Frum, a former Beach Bush speechwriter who now writes a blog for National Review Online, but also with NPR's Mara Liasson and with David Savage of the Los Angeles Times. You're listening to special coverage from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. This is special coverage from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Harriet Myers has asked President Bush to withdraw her nomination to the Supreme Court. The president reluctantly accepted her suggestion. In a statement, the president said Myers' decision demonstrates her deep respect for this essential aspect of the constitutional separation of powers and confirms my deep respect and admiration for her. NPR's Mara Liasson and David Savage of the Los Angeles Times are here with us in Studio 3A. We'll be back with them in just a moment. We'll also be hearing in a few minutes from Senator Sam Brownback, but we want to finish our conversation with Jay Sekulow, chief counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, and David Frum, a former speechwriter for President Bush and a critic of the Myers nomination. And just before the break, David Frum, Jay Sekulow was speculating about some potential nominees, people who might be on the short list this time around. Tell me, are there people on the list that we've all seen who you would believe would be unacceptable?
I think most of the names that are out there are names that people will, the conservatives will support. There are some other names I could probably add to Jay's list. I think one name that I think the president will want to consider pretty seriously is Michael McConnell.
Absolutely.
Who is a jurist who's very well regarded by religious conservatives, well regarded by members of the Federalist Society, well liked in Congress, broad support. I think one of the things, when I said the system worked, the two most recent Supreme Court nominations, Stephen Breyer for the Democrats, John Roberts for the Republicans, these are both, Breyer's a strong liberal, Roberts a strong conservative, both the men of intellectual distinction, and both of them got through the Senate with considerable votes from the other party, from people who disagreed with their views, but said, you know, sometimes the Democrats win, sometimes the Republicans win. When that happens, each gets to make their choice. Just pick your best. And I think we need to go in that model, that the kind of conservative judge that Stephen Breyer was is a liberal judge that John Roberts is, and there are at least a dozen of those people. men and women.
Mm-hmm. What about the one name that we have heard, that of the current Attorney General of the United States, Alberto Gonzalez?
Well, as Jay says, it's extreme. It's hard to imagine.
I can't imagine.
Would pick him. If only for this, one of the things this president has to be very concerned about is upholding executive power. You know, we got a lot of important war and terror decisions. You know, the court, and those may be close. You want a 9-member Supreme Court, not an 8-member Supreme Court with the Attorney General recusing himself. I don't think that's going to happen.
What about another name that's been thrown into the mix, a member of the Senate Judiciary Committee, John Cornyn, Republican of Texas?
Well, a very bright guy. And I had the privilege of arguing a case with him. We were on the same side of the case at the Supreme Court of the United States. And he served as a Texas Attorney General. He's been a U.S. Senator. And, of course, he was also a Supreme Court Justice in Texas. So he certainly has the background. So I think he would certainly be within that list of people that the president would consider, and you are hearing his name mentioned. But I think if the president decides to go with the Mike McConnells, the Mike Luttigs, the Sam Alitos, the Janice Rogers Brown, and Priscilla Owen, you've got a known quantity there and a known entity. And although John Cornyn, I think, would be very, very good as well. And as David just said, there's probably 10 others we can name to the list that would be fine. And I think General Gonzalez is the Attorney General of the United States. And if you thought the difficulty of the document issue with Harriet Myers was significant, just add to that the Attorney General who was former White House counsel. I mean, it just would seem to me insurpassable.
Let me ask you, David Frum, there are some of those names, at least, that you both have mentioned, that would trigger intense opposition from the Democratic Party. Is the prospect of a filibuster fight something that the president and conservatives and Republicans should shy away from at this moment?
Well, look, one of the things that people say is that conservatives are spoiling for a fight. I just don't believe it. I don't think conservatives wanted a great debate. I think they wanted a great justice. And I think John Roberts shows, and Stephen Breyer too, that this putting people on the Supreme Court does not have to be an all-out ideological war, that in the Senate there's a lot of respect for excellence and there's a lot of respect for elections. I mean, if Republicans win an election and they win the majority of the Senate, they get to pick a Supreme Court judge if a vacancy comes up, and Democrats respect that, just as Republicans did with Stephen Breyer. And I think one of the things we also saw with Roberts was that filibuster deal held. I mean, if you name somebody who's serving on an appellate court of the United States, the Democrats have said they will only filibuster if a person is in extraordinary circumstances. By definition, an appeals court judge or a professor at a distinguished law school or something like that, it's impossible to imagine that anybody can see that as being an extremist or extraordinary choice.
Especially in light of the fact that some of the ones we've named were part of the compromise that was worked with Lindsey Graham and others. They were specifically included in that. So to now say there's an extraordinary circumstances, whoops, it's not the Court of Appeals, it's the Supreme Court, I just don't think that would fly, and I don't think they could mount a filibuster challenge based on that.
David Frum, we know you have to leave us. We thank you for your time today.
Thank you very much.
David Frum is a former speechwriter for President Bush, now writes a blog for National Review Online, and is a fellow at the American Enterprise Institute. He joined us from his home here in Washington, D.C. Jay Sekulo, let me follow up with you with one more question, and that is, as this goes forward, again, you thought at one time that when Harriet Myers' questionnaire came out about her support for right to life, that conservatives would then realign behind her. That didn't happen. She never gained any particular support in the United States Senate or in the public, for that matter, if that matters. But the fact of the matter is, there is still a split in the conservative movement, isn't there?
Well, there is, and I think what you just said is absolutely correct, and it's the latter, the split in the Senate, because at the end of the day, what I say and David says, we don't vote. But she didn't get to garner the support of the Senate, and there was perhaps a multitude of reasons there. And so you never saw that coalescing that was necessary to move this forward, and I think that reality started coming into play. Having said that, I really do believe that the president goes to a known conservative, you're going to see bygones be bygones, and a very organized effort on behalf of conservatives to get that nominee confirmed.
Jay Sekulo, thank you very much
for
speaking with
me.
Us today. We know you're in a hurry to get away as
Thanks.
Well. Jay Sekulo is chief counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, and he joined us by phone from Nashville, Tennessee. And Mara Liasson, is he right? If the president does go for one of those conservative names at the possible risk of a filibuster, are conservatives going to pull together for him?
Well, that certainly is the question that I personally am most interested in, because I'll be working on that story. We don't know. I think a lot of conservatives will come back into the fold. For a lot of conservatives, they weren't disenchanted with the Bush administration. They just didn't like this nominee. As a matter of fact, the television ads that were run against Myers by conservatives, which is an extraordinary thing in and of itself, not by Democratic opponents or liberal interest groups. But those ads said, we support President Bush, we just don't support Harriet Myers. Mm-hmm. So I do think that there will be an effort also because conservatives and Republicans saw what this was doing to themselves. I think there's going to be a real desire to at least look like you're coming together, even if the wounds are still festering. But yes, I think most conservatives will come back into the fold. But for others, mentally, the Myers nomination began the post-Bush era. In other words, it was just the moment at which they kind of stopped worrying so much about the Bush agenda and started thinking about what was going to come next and the upcoming fight for the soul of the Republican Party, which will be the fight for the next nominations, because there's no heir apparent, which is another unusual situation in Washington today.
And whether that manifests itself in this next nomination process or on a budget dispute or war in Iraq.
Right. We don't know.
We don't know, but you're saying that moment has happened.
Yeah.
Joining us now is Republican Senator Sam Brownback of Kansas. He's a member of the Senate Judiciary Committee. And, Senator, thanks very much for being with us today.
Happy to join you.
And why do you think, ultimately, Harriet Myers had to withdraw her name?
We got at a log jam on documents. This is an unusual candidate where the candidate is actually working in the White House. Her key constitutional experience was in the White House. And the White House claimed constitutional privilege on a set of documents that if we were really going to know the candidate's view on constitutional issues, we had to have. Mm-hmm. So we had a need, they had a requirement, the two could not be met.
Senator Spector, the chairman of your committee, said today, the Judiciary Committee carefully did not intrude on the president's executive privilege. The committee studiously avoided asking what advice Ms. Myers gave to the president, and that limitation would have been continued in any hearing with an adequate range of questions available to enable the committee to decide her qualifications for the court. We must guard against the Myers proceedings becoming a precedent for the future.
Well, I think that's a fair statement to make. But I think also what we had taking place here was a very unusual set of circumstances. We had similar documents on John Roberts, but it was during his Reagan White House era. And I think you really just came at a loggerhead on what the White House was thinking was going to be required of them and what the Senate was looking forward to probe, and just as a feeling like these two were not going to be able to merge.
Mm-hmm. We know you've got to run in just a moment, but if you were asked for advice by the president as to who you might nominate next, and you may well be, what might that advice be?
I'd hope he would put forward a brilliant jurist who we have a pretty good idea from their record on the bench or public statements of where they stand on some of the key issues of the day. I don't think we should go forward with these processes where it's just you have an unknown candidate and one of the key assets is stealth. I think we should have a good, wide-open, robust discussion with the country on the role of the courts, even on the key issues of the day, and put forward a nominee that's well-qualified and has known views.
And if those issues include known views on the subjects of abortion, affirmative action, things like that, that's okay by you?
Well, certainly Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who was a former general counsel for ACLU and nominated by President Clinton, was well-known on those issues, was a qualified jurist, and made it to the bench. I don't see why we can't have that type of discussion now, and particularly where the president ran on the notion of appointing conservative judges. He was not hidden on this during the campaign. It was known. He should put forward those sorts of nominees.
Senator Brownback, we know you do have another appointment. We appreciate you taking the time to call us today.
Thank you, Neil.
Sam Brownback, Republican of Kansas, a member of the Senate Judiciary Committee, speaking with us from his office on Capitol Hill. And, David Savage, let me just turn to you on Senator Brownback's last point. These issues are going to come up. They're going to be extremely divisive in front of the Senate Judiciary Committee, indeed in the full Senate.
Yes, I think the real mystery in this, Neil, is what's George Bush's view? You know, you succeeded in your conversation of getting David Frum and Jay Sekulow back together. They have been completely divided on the Harriet Myers nomination, and they said, and Senator Brownback said, give us a real conservative, you know, the conservative we really wanted in the first place, and we'll all get together and support him. Okay, but is that the way George Bush is going to view it? Is he going to view it that some of the right-wing groups really attacked Harriet Myers? Is he now going to say, I really should have done what they wanted? Or is he going to react the other way and say, I'll give them somebody they don't want, like Al Gonzalez.
The president has been known to, be a little stubborn.
Yeah, the president has been known to be stubborn, but on the other hand, he's never broken with his base before. His basic political strategy has always been to tend to the base first and foremost, and it's worked for him very well. This is how he won re-election. It's how he prospered in the 2002 midterms. This was an aberration. To basically pick someone who was anathema to his base, especially at a time when he's at 38% or 40% approval ratings. I mean, and the support he's lost is among Republicans and conservatives. He never had any support from Democrats. So that's a really good, David asked a really good question. I mean, will he be, he is one of these people who's likely to say, hey, you guys really, you know, he could be mad. But I think he's going to get a lot of advice. And I think his advice is going to be, let's have a unity candidate, at least for Republicans.
We're talking about Harriet Meyer's withdrawal as a nomination, be a member of the United States Supreme Court. And you're listening to special coverage from NPR News. Michael Gerhardt is a professor of law at the University of Chapel Hill in North Carolina. He joins us now from the studios of WUNC in Chapel Hill. Professor, nice to have you with us.
Thanks for having me. Good afternoon.
I wonder, we were talking earlier with David Frum, conservative commentator, who said, well, this shows the system works. Does the Myers withdrawal suggest that the system of nominating and vetting a candidate works?
I'm not sure that it shows that it works. I think what it shows is that the president had tried to make some shortcuts and that those didn't work. He used a different process for settling on Harriet Meyers as his nominee. That different process obviously proved to be problematic because it didn't prepare them for all the objections. And now he's got a problem because the senators are and interest groups are expecting a different kind of nominee, and he's a little more I think, put into a corner here than he was initially.
What do you make of the argument that's been put forward by Harriet Meyers in her letter, by the White House and by Republicans today, that this was a matter of executive privilege, that inevitably the Judiciary Committee would have demanded documents or testimony about her services to the president that should be privileged?
Well, that argument makes a lot of sense, but there are two problems with it. First of all, it was completely foreseeable. If you're going to nominate your White House counsel or anybody in the White House counsel's office, you'd know that there are going to be a request for documents from that office, so you've got to prepare yourself for it. The second problem is that you want to, if you're going to nominate somebody from that office, the White House counsel's office, you also want to be able to, you want to be prepared to talk about that person's background and what he or she has done in government to some extent, because that's part of their record. So you want at least to make sure that there's something to talk about. And with Harriet Meyers, what most of what she's done in government, you can't talk about.
Mm-hmm. And Mara Liasson, let me bring you into this. I think that argument was a little bit undermined by the fact that a columnist here in town, Charles Krauthammer in The Washington Post, laid out this exact scenario last week and said, this is the way for everybody to save face in what will otherwise be an embarrassment.
I mean, it's you said it in your intro. Nobody believes that. That explanation that, oops, we got to this impasse about documents, and that's why this nomination couldn't go forward. The impasse about documents was convenient, and it did allow a gracious exit strategy, exactly as Charles Krauthammer laid out in his column. He almost wrote Harriet Meyer's letter. I mean, she respects these two institutions deeply, the Senate and the White House, and they're irreconcilable. I don't think that the White House thought that it was going to have to divulge these documents. They thought that Harriet Meyers would win over senators and the right, and they wouldn't have this problem. It is rare when you have Republicans in a documents fight with this White House. We've had lots of document fights. This is a secretive White House, and they guard all their privileges very closely. And you've had Democrats railing about why the White House won't turn over certain things to them. But never before have you had Republicans. But I think it was a very convenient, a good, gracious excuse to pull out.
Mm-hmm. Professor Gerhardt, let me ask you, if this can be seen as a nomination that failed for failure to gain political traction, are there precedents before? I mean, we know of Supreme Court nominees, for example, who've skeletons have leapt out of their closet unexpectedly.
Yes, I mean, I suppose there are precedents for this, and they are perhaps precedents precisely because they do reflect what happens when you don't do enough sort of background vetting. Doug Ginsburg was nominated in the wake of Robert Bork's rejection by the Senate, and then suddenly after he was nominated, it was discovered or revealed that he had smoked marijuana as a Harvard law professor. That surprised people, particularly on the right, the law and order crowd, so to speak, and that nomination was withdrawn within 9 days of its having been made. So this has happened before. This time it didn't happen as quickly as it did with Ginsburg. Other times we find information takes a little bit longer to come out. But I think what's really unprecedented here is to see how much of the president's party and interest groups close to the president really just drew back from this nomination so quickly and just were really recoiled from it.
Mm-hmm. Mara Liasson, David Savage, and Michael Gerhardt, stay with us. We're going to have to take another short break. White House counsel Harriet Myers this morning withdrew as a nominee to the Supreme Court in a letter to the president. Myers wrote that her confirmation process would have presented a burden for the White House. You can read her entire statement and President Bush's response at our website, npr.org. And we'll have more on this story after the break. I'm Neil Conan. This is special coverage from NPR News. This is special coverage from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. This morning, Harriet Myers asked President Bush to withdraw her nomination to be on the Supreme Court of the United States. According to the White House, President Bush accepted that suggestion with reluctance. With me to discuss reaction and where we go next are NPR political correspondent Mara Liasson and David Savage, Supreme Court reporter for the Los Angeles Times. Also with us is Michael Gerhardt, professor of law at the University of Chapel Hill in North Carolina. He's with us from the studios of member station WUNC in Chapel Hill. And Michael Gerhardt, if we're back at square one, what's the next step in this process?
Well, the next step, obviously, is that President Bush has got to sort of recalibrate. But one thing he's got to think about pretty quickly is the extent to which he wants these interest groups to dominate the nomination process. I mean, typically they've tried to influence confirmation outcomes, but now they want to actually influence his particular choice. He's got to decide the extent to which he looks beholden to them or the extent to which he's going to try and unify Democrats and Republicans like he did with the Roberts nomination.
And David Savage, let me ask you a question about timing. If the president were to make another nomination, presumably it takes him some period of weeks to do that. What I've been hearing is that the Senate Judiciary Committee might not be able to get around to hearings for a nominee till maybe January.
Yes, that sounds right. And they can say Sandra O'Connor is on the Supreme Court and is filling that seat, so there's no hurry. I think this would be there'd be a lot of reason for President Bush to take his time on this one, because as Michael Gerhardt is saying, there have been some real fiascos in the past where, you know, Nixon had Clement Haynesworth voted down. They immediately came back and picked Harold Carswell, and then Carswell had a terrible record. He'd given a series of segregation speeches. When Robert Bork went down, as Michael mentioned, they immediately came back with Doug Ginsburg, and they really hadn't done enough vetting of Doug Ginsburg. So I think, considering what's happened this time, it'd be wise for President Bush actually to take some time and sort of vet the nomination before he goes forward.
Mara, similarly, though, you don't necessarily want too long a time between the announcement of a nomination and the beginning of confirmation hearings for, well, opposition groups, whichever side they may be on, to ferret out whatever's in the background.
Right, although you have to assume that whatever's in the background is going to come out. I mean, you can't assume that if only you just start the hearings. There's going to be a certain period of time between the announcement and the hearings. You saw the same tug of war over Myers that you always see. Democrats want to wait a little longer, and the Republicans, Specter, wanted to start the hearings soon. But believe me, the date of November 7th, which they set for Myers, was plenty of time for a lot of stuff to come out that was harmful to her. But look, I think that they're going to, whoever he puts up, there's going to be the same. This is the swing seat. People forget. This is the big enchilada here for both the left and the right. And this is going to be a big battle no matter who's put up there. And I don't know. There's no more Roberts on the shortlist. That was the problem he had the first time. Nobody with a glittering establishment resume, no paper trail on the big hot button issues, and someone who the conservatives will rally around and won't be so provocative to the left. I mean, I don't know who it is.
Mm-hmm. Michael Gerhardt, in terms of process, is there anything the White House might want to do differently next time around?
Well, as David suggests, and as Mara suggests, I think the smart thing for the president to do, and I'm sure he'll try and do this, is he's going to have to sort of take a deep breath, move a little bit more deliberately, and they're going to make sure every I is dotted and every T is crossed at this point. Moving slowly and deliberately is critical. That's number one. Number two, I think, is talking with as many senators as possible. And also, I suspect they're going to reach out to interest groups and try and build up support for this nomination before it becomes public. That may be a critical feature of this time that they didn't do last time.
But I don't know if that's possible. How do you build up support for a nomination without making it public? Look at what happened when they tried to have these conference calls to rally support for conservatives. Everything gets out if you're talking to interest groups.
And you're right. And as you point out, there's not another John Roberts in the wings. And that's another challenge for this administration. It's going to have to figure out how much of a fight it can handle.
Michael Gerhardt, thank you very much for being with us. We appreciate your time, as always.
Thank you very much.
Michael Gerhardt is professor of law at the University of Chapel Hill in North Carolina, and he's with us from the studios of WUNC in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. And let me ask you, David Savage, just at the moment, obviously, there is Sandra Day O'Connor on the Supreme Court of the United States. She may be the person most disappointed today to find out this nomination is not going to go ahead, and she can't retire as she'd hoped to. But if going back to that timeline, if there aren't confirmation hearings till January, well, she will have heard then most of the cases of this Supreme Court term.
Yes, that's correct. I had said, I believe on this program and in some other places, that I didn't see why she was there. It was totally symbolic. She was, your votes don't count on the Supreme Court until the day the case comes down. And so I thought she's going to be there a month or two, hear a few cases, but her votes won't count in any case. It's now possible her votes will count, and she could be the deciding vote in this big Oregon case on assisted suicide. She appeared to be very much with Oregon, saying this is the decision of the people of Oregon. If they want to have this Death with Dignity Act, that's their decision. That decision could be out in January, and it could be a 5-4 decision with Justice O'Connor casting the fifth vote.
And while there are no big, you know, definitive abortion cases coming before the court, there could be some of interest to people on both sides of that argument as well.
Absolutely. There's one up in late November, a parental notification case, and she will certainly be sitting there for the argument, and we'll just have to see how quickly this plays out as to whether she'll actually be there the day that the case is decided.
Joining us now is California Senator and Democrat Dianne Feinstein. She's with us from her office on Capitol Hill. Senator, good of you to be with us today.
Oh, thank you.
I wanted to get your reaction to the Myers withdrawal. Do you see it as an example of the process working?
Well, I was very surprised by it, but it's happened, and I think now we've got to go forward and look to the future. I, for one, hope the president takes his time. I hope he really does engage in advise and consent. I think when these nominations do the best is when a president just picks up the phone and talks with members of both sides of the aisle. They're on the Judiciary Committee. President Clinton actually did that with Republicans on the Judiciary Committee, and I think it created an atmosphere in which Clinton's appointments were able to go through very easily. What we have right now is a very polarized situation, and there are many of us that believe that the president will hopefully appoint somebody whose qualifications are well known. That's one of the problems here. The qualifications of Harriet Myers were really difficult to establish because most of it came during her time at the White House. And at the White House, she was on the immediate staff of the President of the United States. And therefore, the President did not want to allow any documents to come to the Judiciary Committee so one could take a look at her background. I think it's fair to say that members did not have any real knowledge of her qualifications other than what's been out there in the press, and it wasn't enough.
Harry Reid, the minority leader, the Democratic leader in the Senate, said today that he thought the Myers nomination was shot down by the extreme right of the Republican Party.
Well, I think there's no question about that. I've certainly never seen as visceral a campaign against her or against a nominee. I mean, television ads began, and, you know, this is part of her own party. So, I mean, I think it's one end of the political spectrum that rose up and said, we don't want this nominee.
Throughout this argument, many in the Democratic Party sort of stayed on the sideline and sort of watched the Republicans and conservatives argue with each other. But the outcome, some suspect, might be a nominee who might be harder to take on a lot of issues than Harriet Myers was.
Well, I think the president would be poorly advised to proceed in that direction. The Supreme Court is for all of the people of the nation, liberals, conservatives, mainstream. And I think the president has an obligation to appoint somebody that represents all of America, not just a segment of America. No one owns the Supreme Court. No one is entitled to an appointment.
if the next nominee is perceived to be an extreme right winger by you or by others, is this something that the Democrats would be prepared to fight over, have a filibuster over?
Well, you know, the thing about your question is the if, which makes it hypothetical, and I don't usually like to answer hypothetical questions, but obviously no one is going to stand by and see somebody, as the expression I heard earlier today was, crammed down our throats. We're not going to heave to that. And that's why I think it's particularly important for the president to utilize an advice and consent procedure. You know, there's too much polarization back here. Let's put an end to it. Let's try to work together. There are so many qualified people out there. And we all know this individual will be Republican. We all know they'll be conservative. That isn't the problem. The problem is whether an individual is extreme and, you know, doesn't meet certain criteria that individuals might hold.
If the White House were to call you and say, well, give us a couple of for instances, people who you think might be well-qualified conservative members of the Supreme Court.
Well, I mean, I could think of one right now, and I haven't. I'll go back and think of more, but, you know, one might be Ron George. He's the Chief Justice of the California Supreme Court. It's the largest state Supreme Court. He's a Republican. He's well-qualified. He certainly knows the law. He certainly has the qualifications. It's somebody like that, and I don't think he'd have a problem.
Senator Feinstein, thank you very much for being with us today.
Oh, you're very welcome.
We appreciate your
thank
time.
Thank you. Right.
Democrat Dianne Feinstein, who's also a member of the Senate Judiciary Committee, and she joined us by phone from her office on Capitol Hill. Still with us are NPR national political correspondent Mara Liasson and David Savage, who covers the Supreme Court for the Los Angeles Times. If you've joined us late and are just trying to figure out what's going on, Harriet Myers, President Bush's nominee to the Supreme Court, this morning withdrew her nomination. The White House issued a statement where the president said he accepted that decision reluctantly, and we're talking about reaction to it. You're listening to special coverage from NPR News. And Mara, just listening to what Senator Feinstein had to say, Democrats certainly don't have the votes in Congress, in either House, and certainly not in the Senate. At the same time, the White House, the president's ratings are at an all-time low. I mean, these things change over time, but he's not dealing from a position of strength. And the political background of this is there could be, emphasis on could be, indictments of senior White House aides as soon as tomorrow.
The president's approval ratings were bouncing around in the low 40s before he nominated Harriet Myers, and they were waiting for indictments then. There were all these problems existed then. And the thinking among some Republicans at the time was, this isn't very good for us, but just wait till the president sends up a conservative nominee. We're all going to rally around that nominee. We're going to have a good, clear ideological fight with the Democrats, split the Democrats again, like we did with Roberts, and that will be good for us. Well, that didn't happen. But and one of the analyses of the Roberts the Myers nomination was the president chose not to have that kind of fight. He didn't want one. Either he judged himself too politically weak to have one, or he didn't have whatever. Now he's back to where he was. Is he willing to have that kind of fight with Democrats? And you heard Dianne Feinstein, she didn't vote for Roberts.
Mm-hmm.
I think that anyone the president sends up who will be acceptable to conservatives, if you take that as a given, that he is going to find someone who's acceptable to conservatives, is going to get a minimum of 22 no votes from Democrats, I think. I mean, I don't see how they do any better than Roberts did.
That's how many voted against John Roberts.
Yeah, so I don't see how the next one, given that it's the swing seat, it's the crucial seat, it's the balance of power on the court that's in the that's at stake, how they get more Democrats. And you had a bunch of Democratic interest groups who have been very quiet. We have not heard from them through the whole Myers thing because they've been happily sitting on the sidelines watching this intramural fight. They warned every Democrat, okay, we didn't get as many votes as we wanted against Roberts, but next time we are counting on you to vote no. This is the big one. And there's going to be tremendous pressure on Democrats to vote no.
David Savage, indeed, there was the opinion during the Roberts hearing that Democrats were keeping their powder dry, some of them perhaps voting for John Roberts while maybe holding their nose, but at least to say, well, see, if the person's highly qualified, we can vote for him. Next time around is the one that'll matter.
Yes, I think It's very easy to envision a scenario if President Bush were to do what some of the earlier speakers were saying and pick somebody who's very conservative and basically is on record as saying Roe versus Wade was wrong and I would overturn it. You not only lose the 44 Democrats, the Republicans say, okay, we don't need the Democrats, but you'd even be in danger of losing some Republicans like Arlen Specter.
The chairman of the Senate Judiciary.
Yes, right? Olympia Snowe from Maine. There are several pro-choice Republicans, because that's the real, I think if I were advising President Bush, that's the real danger. It's not just losing the Democrats. If you go too far right, you could then lose some Republicans and then have a situation where your nominee doesn't get confirmed.
Who on this short list does not have a paper trail on Roe like that? Who would avoid that problem on the short list?
Some of them have paper trails and beliefs that sound like John Roberts. That is, that they're probably personally opposed to abortion. They think it's abominable or immoral. They've said things like that. And they think that the Roe versus Wade decision was wrongly decided. But they've never actually written that it should be overturned. And so I'm not sure. I think Mike Luttig would be close to somebody who thinks Roe was wrongly decided and should be overturned. I think there are a few others that might. Janice Rogers Brown is a fairly blunt person. I think she would take that view. So I have not researched all their records, but I think some of them, there would be the danger if you do exactly what some of the conservative groups want. Give us a conservative with a conservative record. You would be in danger of sending up somebody who may not be confirmed.
But there are conservatives on the short list who don't have that kind of black and white record on Roe that conservatives would like.
Yes, that's right.
So in other words, he does have people to choose from that at least wouldn't come in with bells clanging on Roe.
But even if it's somebody like Mike McConnell, who is very well regarded among academics and would be a pretty smart pick, there will be a lot of discussion in the hearings of saying, Judge McConnell, you've said Roe was wrongly decided. It was an abominable decision. We want to know, what does that mean? Are you now going to overturn it if you get on the Supreme Court? So there would be a big focus on that.
From Democrats, as opposed to with a stealth nominee where you get those questions from Republicans, and that makes it more uncomfortable.
Well, from Democrats, and as we saw in the Roberts hearings, from the chairman, Arlen Specter of Pennsylvania, who's no small influence in the Senate Judiciary Committee hearings. And Mara, let me ask you finally, we're running out of time on this, but the president, as he looks ahead on this, 3 years left, is this the lame duck session of the Bush presidency?
Well, you know, last week during the height of the conservative revolt, I had conservatives tell me, isn't it ironic that conservatives, you know, turned George Bush into a lame duck faster than Democrats did? Well, it could be. I mean, he has to come back. Don't forget, it's not just Myers. It's Katrina. It's Iraq. It's spending. It's all these other things. Social Security's dead. He has to come out in February in the State of the Union address or end of January and lay out an agenda that's going to unify his base, appeal to the country, and be able to get through Congress. I don't know what that is. If he can't do that, yes, he's officially a lame duck at that point.
Mara Liasson, thanks very much for being with us. Mara Liasson is NPR's national political correspondent. David Savage, Supreme Court reporter for the Los Angeles Times, we thank you for your time today as well. They were both kind enough to join us here in Studio 3A. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. You've been listening to special coverage from NPR News.